You're listening to Wharton Moneyball on Business Radio, Sirius XM 111.
Welcome back, sports fans, business fans, and analytics fans here on Wharton Moneyball, here on Sirius XM 111, Wharton Business Radio. This is Eric Bradlow, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Shane Jensen and Adi Weiner. We've been talking a lot of NFL and a little NFL. We've talked a lot of baseball this morning so far. And of course, if you want to join the conversation, you can call in at 1-844-WHARTON. That's 1-844-942-7866. You can also email our producer, Matt Johnson, at businessradio@siriusxm.com. And I hope you follow us on during the week when I tweet a lot of stuff at bizradio111. So we're very honored to be joined by a guest this morning, Caroline Miller, who's author of a recent book, Getting Grit, The Evidence-Based Approach, which we like, to cultivating passion, perseverance, and purpose. Caroline is one of the world's leading positive psychology experts. So, Caroline, welcome to Wharton Moneyball. This is Eric Bradlow, and I'm here with Shane Jensen and Adi Weiner.
Great. Thanks for having me. I'm kind of a geeky little fan of your show, so This is very exciting for me.
Oh, thank you. That's nice of you to say.
Yeah, real nice.
Matter of fact, my guess is many of the fans of our show are geeky little fans of our show, and so we like that audience as well. So,
if you don't mind, I'm going to quickly correct you. My book isn't out yet.
Oh,
Getting Grit is out next June from Sounds True Publishing. The book that will probably come up today is the one that was the result of my capstone when I was at Penn a few years ago. 10 years ago, I was in the first class of the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology with Marty Seligman.
Sure.
So that book is about the science of goal setting married with the science of happiness. But Getting Grit is kind of an outgrowth of it, and we can get into that too. But it's out next June, so everybody can just wait a little bit
longer. We'll have to wait a little longer to get grit. Getting grit.
Well, I will want to dive in just a second about the relationship between grit, goal setting, and happiness, which you just brought up, Caroline. But let me ask you a question that many of our listeners here on Wharton Moneyball might want to know, which is, we hear the term grit used all the time. And since you're going to take an evidence-based approach, like, the first question is, like, what
Define
is it?
It?
Define it. What actually is grit?
Okay, I'm going to have to give you two answers. So I was exposed to Angela Duckworth's research when I was at Penn. She was getting her PhD 2005, 2006. But she was doing this really fascinating work on, you know, people in the spelling bee and, you know, West Point. And she came up with a definition that is perfect in some ways. And it's passion and perseverance in pursuit of long-term goals. That really encapsulates it beautifully. Except people immediately get a puzzle book and say, well, gee, doesn't someone like Hitler have grit? So the answer is yes, that definition would fit really bad kinds of grit. So I came up with a slightly different definition that is the right grit in the right context for the right reasons. And I call it authentic grit. And I'll give you my definition. Just goes a little deeper. It's the passionate pursuit of hard goals that awes and inspires other people to become better, flourish emotionally, take positive risks, and live their best lives. So it's grit for the right reasons. And there's bad grit, and that's one of the things that people have to understand. There's a line between having, you know, the right grit for the right reasons and then having something I call stupid grit or selfie grit or faux grit. So there are reasons to understand all the bad ways that it can come up, because that's something not everyone has heard before or understands.
So is grit, like, how would you separate grit from, like, determination or hard work? Mm-hmm. Are those radically different, or is it the goal part of it that makes them different?
A couple things make it different. It's not enough to be determined. It's not enough to be ambitious. It's not even enough to be passionate or have goals. Grit is this cake that you bake with all of these ingredients. And so the reason why grit matters so much is it's this super, super long-term pursuit of very meaningful goals to a certain person. So people are lit up by gritty goals, and because it is a long-term goal, it's almost guaranteed you're going to fail, you're going to have setbacks, you're going to have dark nights of the soul.
Failing along the way, you mean? Failures along the process, yeah.
You won't get it easily. And so one of the things that fascinated me when I was at Penn is I heard about this thing called goal-setting theory, Locke and Latham. You know, it's an open theory. It's very well validated. And yet, as the great-niece, my great-uncles were in the 1912 Olympics. They were gold and silver medalists. I think they were the first siblings to go 1-2 in the Olympics. I was a competitive swimmer. I married an athlete who's in the Harvard Hall of Fame for lacrosse. I mean, my whole DNA is about competitiveness. My kids are competitive athletes, but I had never once heard that there was a science to goal setting. I was so stunned to find this out, because even when I listen to your show, there are people who are talking about goal setting and hard goals and the rest of it, but they talk about SMART goals, which is not accurate. There is a real science to goal setting. I want to get into that a little bit today, because I think there's some mistakes made in business and in sports because people don't understand the nuances of goal setting. And so from that, I went deeper into hard goals. And if you're going to have hard goals, and we all ought to, because there's a real connection between pursuing hard goals and emotional flourishing, having a good life, you have to have this quality of grit. But we are in a society where people don't have it. It has gone missing for all the obvious reasons, the trophies, the this, the that. But we got to get it back, and it's time to start. We all can play a role in that.
So let me. This is Adi Weiner. I'm really intrigued by what you're talking about, because it's an aspect of the science of sports that's not so easily measured. Mm-hmm. You talk about grit, and we're missing it, and it's a science of grit. So I guess I have two parts. First of all, tell us about that science, and one, can you teach it?
Yeah,
can you learn grit if you don't have it?
Right. Are you born with, as Adi's saying, are you born with grit, or is it nature versus nurture?
Okay, so that's the big debate. And I would not have spent the last couple years working on this book unless I believed you could cultivate grit. So I'm exhibit A in that. So grit can be more natural to some people who are born with, let's say, higher self-regulation or willpower. And girls are naturally more have higher willpower when they're young. So I also have ADHD, and so I know that the impulsiveness can be a deterrent to having grit. So some people start with a slightly better advantage when it comes to being gritty. However, everyone can get grittier. Everybody can learn how to get lit up by something that is important to them, have a goal, and kind of see it through to the finish line. Now, it takes a variety of things to get there, and that's the burning question in the grit field, which is, how do you build grit? So my hypotheses are in my book, Getting Grit. I'll tell you why I think it's so important, and that is, you know, 30-some years ago, I wrote the first book by anybody who overcame the eating disorder bulimia. And so that book, My Name is Caroline, literally turned my life upside down, because it came out at a time when not only was no one really talking about it, but nobody thought anybody got better. It was just the Karen Carpenter, you're going to die thing. So I was a swimmer. I went to Harvard. I was surrounded by all these other bulimics, and I really thought it was my fate in life. But then somebody was at a meeting, a self-help meeting for compulsive eaters, and she said this sentence that changed my life. And she just said, my name is Betsy, and I'm recovering from bulimia one day at a time. And everything in my body and my soul reacted to it. She gave me hope. And now I understand hope theory, because when an athlete has hope, when anyone has hope, they develop something called pathways thinking. And that means that they generate more solutions to their obstacles or to how to get to their goals. And then they believe they have what it takes. And so in that moment, everything in my life changed. And I thought, I can get better. And I did. And so that was a temporal landmark for me. Until then, I was successful. I had talent, but I didn't have grit. I didn't have to develop it because things came kind of easily to me. I looked successful. People might have thought I'd worked really hard, but I really hadn't. This was the thing. The seeds of failure were what made me develop grit. I know people can do it. You just have to have a cause. You have to have a reason. You have to have the ability to focus, which is really the new IQ. The 21st century IQ is the ability to focus. So all of those things, when you pull them together, and we can go into the, you know, the different character strengths that I think feed into it, really matter. And people can become grittier. And I think the lack of grit in this, you know, the millennial generation explains something you discussed on your show a few weeks ago, which is, where are all the tennis players? You know, the young male tennis players.
Yeah, where are they?
It was a great discussion. I was screaming at my computer. It's like, talk about grit. Because, you know, the people who analyze, let's say, runners in this country, there was a big Wall Street Journal article that said that people from the National Federation of Road Runners were really lamenting the fact that we, you know, the average male marathoner in this generation is 44 minutes slower than the average male marathoner of previous generations. Well, why is that?
44 seconds slower.
44 seconds.
No, I think it's 44 minutes.
You mean the average?
The average. I'm not talking about
all.
Elite. I'm talking about
all
runners
who run
right?
marathons. They're 44 minutes slower.
I would argue that.
I would believe that
there's a wider population.
Yeah, more and more people are doing it. It used to be just the crazy people who would do it, and now everybody seems to want to run a marathon.
Yeah, but the problem is, and that when you look at the upper ranks, we're being surpassed by other countries
in a variety of sports. Yeah.
Right? So then the question becomes, what happened? And that was what you were discussing. What's happened?
Yeah.
And I do believe that a piece of it is this trophy generation, because it, you know, when kids are praised just for doing nothing, which is what my kids were praised for, it was so alarming to me to watch record boards being hidden at our summer swim league pool, because it would, quote unquote, discourage the children. Or my kids getting trophies. They didn't even know what they were getting trophies for. So there's this great research on the partial reward extinction effect, meaning the more you praise somebody for doing nothing, the more they lose curiosity and interest in actually pursuing those goals. So rats in
interesting.
Mazes,
very
they
interesting.
Actually sit down and they get fat and they stop trying to solve the maze. So this generation has grown up having those, you know, those little neurons in their brains pruned off. So what this running official was saying is, we don't even have competitions anymore. We just have parades. We have people in the color run. It's not even timed, because
times are upsetting
to people.
I
think there's a lack of grit. That's my point.
Yeah, this is Shane Jensen. I want to take sort of the opposite side, I think, of that coin, which is, you know, among sort of I want to maybe touch back on kind of your kind of outline of good grit versus bad grit. Mm-hmm. Prior to you coming on the show, we were discussing what some of us believe is the greatest coach of all time, Bill Belichick, in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Probably he would hit a lot of the sort of like kind of positive measures of grit that you've sort of spoken about. He's obviously very driven. He has goals, etc. At the same time, the counter argument I think that I hear most commonly about him not being the greatest coach of all time is that he cheats. He cheats to win.
Yeah.
And so, you know, similar to somebody like Alex Rodriguez, very driven person, we kind of disparage him now because he cheated in order to get where he is. So does that sort of thing fall into kind of that, like, does that then move him from that good grit category to the bad grit category?
I would call it faux grit. So when you're a Lance Armstrong, when you're an A-Rod, when you're a Bill Belichick,
and you have
to take shortcuts.
Yep.
And I think it's become too common. I call the millennials the shortcut generation, because it used to be uncommon to be redshirted for kindergarten, and now 1 in 6 kids
are
redshirted.
And the 1 in 6 ones are the ones who have the most potential. It's amazing. I've seen this with my kids.
It's
kindergarten, yes.
Did you know that the benefits of actually being redshirted, so having that easy dominance in kindergarten and first grade, you're the biggest kid, you're the most socially mature kid. It's so fascinating what happens when you're redshirted. So this easy win that you get, actually all of those benefits evaporate by 8th grade when the other kids catch up. But the damage that's been done by being redshirted is these kids skip learning fundamentals. And so they never learned kind of the basics of dribbling a soccer ball, or, you know, how to run a route in football, or how to even, you know, do the right technique in the swimming pool. So actually swimming is a little different because it's all time and it's all by age. But the redshirting in general that's so common now has created this whole idea that you can take shortcuts. And I think you do see it at these upper levels where people will do anything to win. So there's a great example of a triathlete in Canada who's been caught recently for, you know, hiding in bathrooms during the running loops. And she comes out and she wins these, you know, big races. And they've found on the footage that she's hiding in bathrooms and cheating. So it's way too common. I call that faux grit. Bill Belichick does do one thing very well, and he's in my book for this, and that is, everyone who's ever gotten a compliment from him can remember the day and the hour of the compliment. So when he praises you, it means something. And that does stand out a little bit from this generation of parents and coaches.
That's a very, very interesting.
Yeah, because the opposite is what's going on now.
That's a very interesting one. So we're here on Wharton Moneyball. We're talking to Caroline Miller. She has a book coming out next June, as she has informed us, author of Getting Grit, The Evidence-Based Approach to Cultivating Passion, Perseverance, and Purpose. She's one of the world's leading positive psychology experts. And again, this is Eric Bradlow, and I'm here with Shane Jensen and Adi Weiner. If you want to join the conversation, if you have a question for Caroline, please please feel free to call us at 1-844-WHARTON. That's 1-844-942-7866. Carolyn, I had a question for you. So we know that right now when people, let's say, go into the NFL or maybe even the NBA, they give people the Wunderlich test. It's supposed to be a test of, you know, intelligence and how quickly someone will be able to learn the playbook, the rules, etc. Is there a test for grit? I mean, I'm a marketing professor, so I'm not a CB person. I'm more on the math side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, mm-hmm. I know there's lots of scale measures you can give people. Is there a test for grit?
Can and you just drop them into a weekend with Bear Grylls or something like that? Or?
Well, that was going to be my other question. Is there a test for grit? Can you observe grit? And also, if there's anything you could say about maybe your knowledge of how it's made its way into the sports world.
Okay, great questions. I hope I can remember to answer all of them. First of all, the grit scale was developed at Penn and developed by Angela Duckworth with Marty Seligman. It's a 12-question test. And what Angela has determined is that your grit score can predict whether or not you stay married, whether or not you finish college, whether or not you survive Beast Barracks in West Point, whether or not you even final in the National Spelling Bee at the age of 12. So, yes, there is a great measure for grit that has been developed. And I called into your radio show a few months ago about this because you were talking about...
I remember.
Effort, and I was... Yeah. Okay. So mm-hmm. I was really curious about this whole idea of how do you measure effort? And I think that is one of the questions that we're trying to figure out.
But Caroline, I don't want to push back. I agree with you. I'm not pushing back. Yeah. I'm interjecting. If this, I mean, Angela, I think is well known. Your work is mm-hmm. well known. If this is mm-hmm. such a well-established measure, maybe you're about mm-hmm. to tell me it is. But why isn't every NFL team using this? Why isn't every NBA team using this? Why isn't this just like a universally
used? Why isn't it part
used,
of the combine?
Yeah, why isn't it part of the combine in every sport?
You know, I think that it's starting to be discussed more. I think we're in a field of you know, slow adoption of certain things. I think the big thing now is virtual reality and big data. But Angela's certainly embedded with the Seattle Seahawks at times. She's gone around and spoken to an awful lot of professional sports teams. So I would say maybe we don't know if they're using it.
Yeah, they're keeping it secret.
I will tell you this, in all the interviews I've done for my book, this is what people are trying to figure out in the professional world. They ask open-ended questions to find out, has anybody overcome anything that would give them this ability to not be a quitter? Because what you find in the business world in particular is that GPAs are meaningless because, you know, I went to Harvard and I can tell you now the average grade there is an A-. And so there is so much grade inflation that you can't look at someone's resume and know that they're a hard worker because their GPAs are interchangeable. Their internships are interchangeable. And so what a lot of, you know, people are trying to figure out is, what's your story? What have you been passionate about? What have you pursued? When my oldest son, who was a really good swimmer, was being, you know, recruited at colleges, I remember we flew out to the University of Washington. First question asked by Mickey Wender, who's now the head of swimming at West Point, was, son, do you go to a public school or a private school? I remember my son just, you know, was like, oh, my God, what does this mean? And, you know, he can't fake the answer. He goes, well, I go to a public school. And he said, good. We want a blue-collar work ethic. We don't, you know, those kids in private schools, they're just used to having everything handed to them. So I know that one little sample that my son went through 10 years ago is something that I do see increasingly. So maybe they're not calling it what it is, but they're looking for kids who have worked hard. They're not looking for the ones who've had early dominance, red shirting, shortcuts, faux grit. So maybe that time is coming. I don't know, but it really ought to be because you look at Monster. I don't know if you have ever heard the Monster ads on the radio. They've switched their entire ad to say, we will find you gritty employees. We will do it. It's not just we'll find you employees. We'll find you gritty employees because there is a huge epidemic in the workplace of these millennials quitting. The minute it's hard, the minute you have to give them a performance review and they don't like what you say about them, or even if you say you met expectations, they cry.
Yeah.
They cry,
but I think,
because they think it's a C.
One of the things that I'm going to react to your observation, and this relates to my earlier question about learning grit. I have two children who have gone, one went to public school and went to private school, and I have a third who's in private school right now. And I can tell you that the public school was much more oriented towards what you're describing, free rewards for everyone. Everything was correctable. I mean, it was
the public school
was a self self-esteem fest. And almost, I mean, grades were inflated, everything, you had an opportunity to do things again. And the private school, they kicked the asses of the kids. They made sure it's almost as if they were trying to develop grit in them because they knew they were so pampered. And her school, not my daughter, but the school was filled with extremely wealthy kids from who were just given everything that they want. And so their environment, I actually feel like I've noticed this even at Penn, the kids who come from private schools, is that the private schools have essentially tried to teach determination to their kids, given the fact that they have to overcome it because they don't have any natural way to get it.
So, Caroline, let me ask you here, given mm-hmm. we're here on Morton mm-hmm. Moneyball, are there, mm-hmm. without giving away everything in your book, Getting Grit, could you give us, are there tactics that people can use to structure environments that will give people more grit? Is there, you know, is it like lifting weights? Can you train yourself to be more grit?
Yes. Is it a role model?
Yeah.
Do you need role models to follow?
What can one do to kind of improve the environment, whether you're a coach, a parent, a teacher? What can one do in this case?
Yep. Okay, a couple things. One is you want to have gritty role models embedded, and you discussed this on your show not long ago, I think, was why would anybody sign Tim Tebow?
Oh, thank you for bringing this up. I was going to ask you about it. Terrific.
Yeah. I mean, because what does he do? He has that amazing work ethic. Everything he does is up to excellent standards. So wouldn't you want, people coming from a generation where good enough was good enough? You want to have role models. I have a great story in my book about a football team in Tennessee, a high school football team, and the coach observed that the minute an Iraq War veteran who's had his legs and arms mangled started cutting the grass at the high school field, he observed that the kids on the team stopped being whiners and they started working harder because of the silent kind of role modeling of this Iraq War veteran who never complained. So you want to embed gritty role models. You also want to encourage people to set hard goals, not smart goals, not realistic goals, hard goals. Goal setting theory states that the best performance always comes from challenging and specific goals. That's not realistic goals. That's unrealistic goals. So you want to set hard goals. You want to have accountability and feedback. You don't want to have some kind of vague kind of soup where people live and it's like, maybe I got there, maybe I didn't. That's another thing. You want to promote humility because there's too much selfie grit. There's too much of Johnny Manziel, flashing the money sign. Notre Dame got the names off the backs of the football jerseys a season or two ago because there was just too much grandstanding after every play. It's like, shut up and do your job, basically. So you want to promote and reward humility. Patience is another thing you want to build in. And then when you think about the plus-minus factor, which is so important in basketball and ice hockey, you want to take a look at the contagion effect of the people in your environment. Do other people make you play better?
Have you seen, Doc? I was going to ask you about that. Have you seen, like you mentioned Tim Tebow, you've now mentioned plus-minus, you could argue that. Have you identified or have you seen evidence that there is this contagion effect that, let's take an NFL team. You only have 53 slots. So Tim Tebow may never play, but he's worth it because he's going to make the other 52 people and the people on the practice squad better. Have you seen evidence that there are contagion effects in grit?
Absolutely. I mean, Angela's seen that. For one thing, at West Point, if your grit score is low, they'll room you with a high grit score person. Why? Because you observe and begin to parrot the habits of gritty people who just do a little bit more. They study a little bit longer. They do more deliberate practice. So, yes, it's contagious. And as a Redskin fan, I will tell you the worst trade ever, I think, in NFL history was Albert Haynesworth, who was a cancer on the locker room. I think somebody, computed that he got $8 million for every time he made a tackle, because he hardly made any after he got this huge signing bonus. But he was a whiner. He was a complainer. And, one of the things that you observe in these locker rooms where you have these contagiously negative, whiny people is the sooner you get rid of them, the better the team performs. You see the same thing in business. Harvard Business Review, McKinsey, they've all studied what do you do when you have a disruptive star? You get rid of them because the amount of time and money that will go into managing everyone else's feelings and the disruption to other people's performance from having a disruptive star completely outweighs the benefits of whatever this star could bring to you. There is a lot of documented evidence of what happens when you have a contagious jerk. And the bottom line advice always, whether it's sports or business, is cut them out as quickly as possible.
This is Shane Jensen. I want to return to something you said before with the kind of generational thing. Is there quantitative evidence that grit has been going down over time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been, you know, I could go on and on about that, but yes. And
like, so people have been measuring grit for, like, this grit on some kind of analytical scale for a generation, and it is decreasing over time.
The only reason
the only reason I push back on that is that there is this narrative that the millennials are this sort of less gritty generation compared to the previous ones. I feel like that narrative is repeated has been probably repeated every generation that humans have been on this earth. So I'm kind of asking for maybe some sort of more objective kind of standard behind that narrative.
So one of the things that colleges are reporting is this epidemic of kids showing up in mental health clinics for anxiety and depression, and they can't seem to handle kind of normal college loads of courses. So that's just one thing that's been really studied. It's, yes, you go back to Genghis Khan saying that his warriors weren't tough enough and he would send them out to the steppes in Mongolia to make them, you know, a little bit tougher. So that's been going on for generations. But what is observable is, you know, anxiety is the common cold of the millennial generation. And they say they're too stressed and there's too much going on. But when you look at what is required of them to just get an A or to graduate, what you find is the standards have been dumbed down dramatically. So they spend less time studying than any previous generation. Their fund of knowledge is smaller, and yet they say they deserve and are entitled to better grades, you know, and they really think that they've worked very, very hard. So all of those things are objectively measured. So what you also find is they're showing up at college, which is really like it's a big playground, if you ask my opinion. I've spoken at major elite colleges, and when I explain goal setting theory and I talk about at the end of every day, we all scan our days for what we did that was hard that day. And the only things that make us proud and give us authentic self-esteem are the things we did outside of our comfort zone. When I explain that and I ask them how many of them did something hard that day, no hands go up. It's really pretty stunning, and they don't have to do hard things because they can sleep late. Well, they pick professors based on, you know, the hours of the classes. Sorry.
And I also commented when you do invite them to do hard things and demand it from them, they go nuts. I mean, so I give them I teach a big statistics class, and I give them fairly complicated data analysis projects. And the feedback that I got from the students is, for the ones who are gritty, to use your vocabulary, and do want to learn this material, it's the favorite part of the course because they feel they've accomplished something hard. But unfortunately, the majority feel it's destructive. It's too hard. It's too much work. And of course,
that's an increasing majority over time.
Well, that's what I feel is. I mean, I can only use the data that I have about myself. And I haven't changed my ways, and you haven't changed your ways, I think, for the most part. Now, you've experienced the same thing. I used to get extraordinary high student evaluations, and now they are downright mediocre. And I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I'm the same person, I think. And I have no idea potentially why. And I've seen it over time. And I think it's partly because I'm not simpatico with the student's culture than I used to be when I was a lot younger. And that, of course, has changed. But I do think in some level it's because they're just not used to the demands that they used to get.
Oh, they're not. In fact, high schools are now starting to abolish just grades altogether because they're too destructive. There was a high school just outside Plano, Texas, in June that didn't even allow students to wear National Honor Society regalia that they'd earned because they said it would upset other students. One town just outside Columbus, Ohio, named 222 students valedictorians last year because they don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So there is objective criteria showing that there's too many winners and they're all being told how great they are. And they get to college and they collapse and they're bringing these comfort animals, these pigs, these turkeys, these snakes. And they're showing up in the
snakes.
Dorms with these waving letters from psychiatrists saying they can't survive without a pig at their side. I mean, it's kind of insane.
snake, though. Okay.
Well, we've been talking to Caroline Miller, author of Getting Grit, The Evidence-Based Approach to Cultivating Passion, Perseverance, and Purpose. I'm sure all of our listeners are looking forward to your book coming out in the middle of next year. We'd like to thank you for joining us here on Morton Moneyball. I know my wife and 10-year-old son were very interested today, because actually my 10-year-old in his fifth grade class, they all had to do the grit scale just this week. Their teacher, Mr. Klein, is very much into measuring grit, and he wants to use that to tailor his instruction to each student. So it's both a personal thing for me, and thank you for joining us here on Morton Moneyball, Caroline.
Thank you so much. What a great discussion. I'll come back next year if you'll have me.
Absolutely.
That would be fantastic. So we're here on Morton Moneyball. This is Eric Bradlow, and I'm here with Shane Jensen and Adi Weiner. So we still have a half hour to go, and we have our big segment coming up where we pick some NFL games. We each pick our game of the week and go through it. So please join us after the break.